one thing that made me actually begin to work at it, which I hadn't realized you had to work at it. You had to work at it. If you're going to be a writer, you have to sit down and write. And that means you have to make time for it. You have to let something else go. You know, you don't do gardening or you don't do something else. You have to, whatever spare time you have, you write. Was when my children were maybe 2 and 5. And I realized I was watching them for any signs of talent they had and thinking about, you know, developing their talent and what they could be and everything. I thought, this is just a vicious circle. Because then my mother must have done that with me, and yet here I am doing nothing and trying, watching my children. And so I thought, okay, I'm going to really work at this, to be a poet, not to write poetry, but to be a poet is something different. Because then it means that you're living this writing. And that's one thing poetry has done for me. Writing poetry made me very observant, and always constantly part of my mind is thinking about what I'm seeing. If something has interested me, if it's an image, if it's an action by a creature or a child or something, and I want to know why I was interested in that, why did that attract my attention, then I know that's a possibility of becoming a poem. And when that became a very large part of my time, when I was thinking about that and writing, spending a lot of time writing. Well, and I want to say something about this because people don't realize when you read a poem, a wonderful poem, it looks like it was simple, like it was put down there and, oh, there's a guy just got it, came inspired and just wrote it down. A good poem that reads that way took a lot of time, you know, taking out things, putting in things, rearranging things. And so writing a poem of mine goes through maybe 35 drafts. And then there are a lot of failures. I'm not satisfied with it. Even though I've worked on it as hard as I thought I could, it failed. Address the Archaeans, one-cell creatures. Although most are totally naked and too scant for even the slightest color, and although they have no voice that I've ever heard for cry or song, they are nevertheless more than mirage, more than hallucination, more than falsehood. They have confronted sulfuric, boiling Black Sea bottoms and stayed, held on under 10 tons of polar ice, established themselves in dense salts and acids, survived eating metal ions. They are more committed than oblivion, more prolific than stars. Far too ancient for scripture, each one bears in its one cell, one text, the first wit of alpha, the first jot of bearing, beneath the riling sun, the first nourishing of self. Too lavish for saints, too trifling for baptism, they have existed throughout, never gaining girth enough to hold a firm hope of salvation. Too meager in heart for compassion, too lean for tears, less in substance than sacrifice, not one has ever carried a cross anywhere, and not one of their trillions has ever been given a tombstone. I've never noticed a lessening of light in the ceasing of any one of them. They are more mutable than mere breathing and vanishing, more mysterious than resurrection, too minimal for death.